Are you or a loved one stuck or frozen in addiction recovery? Are you inspired to drop old and limiting beliefs about who you really are? Process your emotions, disarm the inner critic, and move from self-loathing to self-embracing with Melissa Armstrong Coaching. With online one-on-one coaching, small group coaching, and workshops, Melissa Armstrong can help you find the magic in the darkness. Check out Melissa Armstrong at www.strongarm.ca. That's www.strongarm.ca.
It has been said that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's human connection. Here, we connect anonymously. This is Addicts in the Dark with Quick Nick.
If you're looking to share your struggles, triumphs, and/or insights on addiction, you can apply to be on the show at addictsinthedark.com or email me directly at addictsinthedark@gmail.com. Together, we can break the silence, inspire hope, and support each other on the path to recovery. Right now, it's caller 43 and their story about addiction. Addicts in the Dark.
Hello?
Hi. So no names, no locations, a maximum of an hour. We don't usually get there, but the hour is all yours, should you choose to use it.
Okay, Nick.
So unless you have any questions, let's talk about your addiction.
So I didn't drink until I was about 21, and it was not too big of a thing. Much for parties. I never have been. I have really bad social anxiety. And so it was never really presented to me like peer pressure or anything like that. But it did become an issue when I was in a relationship that, you know, there was more pressure for me to be around people, to be around his friends or his family, things like that. It was a bad relationship just in terms of my mental health. And I found that drinking would help lower my anxiety. It would ease my discomfort in the relationship, my feelings of insecurity. And I began to rely on it every day, every single day. When it became apparent that my drinking was a problem, I was in this relationship and I was in this relationship for 10 years, so a long time. And all of that compounding intake of alcohol led me to organ failure, which was very scary. It started out with just like jaundice, some hair loss, but it culminated in our breakup is when I just kind of went off the rails, still not partying, still not going out and partying or anything. It was alone drinking. It was sad drinking. It, by that point, was drinking out of necessity to avoid withdrawals. And, you know, well, that led to lying about drinking, obviously lying outright, but also by omission, not telling people what I was going through, not being honest about what I was going through. And, you know, organ failure and the effects of organ failure, those things don't lie. You know, it makes it very apparent that something is wrong when you're suffering physical symptoms.
So when you talked about drinking as a means of easing anxiety about the relationship, specifically, did you mean to ease your worries about the fact that you were in a bad relationship or that it wasn't good for you? Or were you drinking to make the bad relationship feel better, to ease the experience of the relationship?
So it helped me to not I don't even want to say dwell on, but even acknowledge the fact that this relationship made me feel bad about myself. It made me feel insecure. It, you know, and I have mental health issues. I always have. I've been in therapy since I was 8 years old. You know, I knew that there were certain things that I can't do. Certain things that were very difficult for me to even think about. And so drinking kind of numbed that. I didn't have to think about, you know, my worry about the relationship. I didn't have to face my insecurity. I would be alone and I would be numb and I would be distracted, you know, and so I wouldn't have to acknowledge it. I could just pretend that it was better because physically I felt better. And it was a disguised better because, you know, my anxiety was gone, but it exacerbated other things. And there's this almost rebound effect that alcohol had where I would dull my anxiety for a bit and then wake up in the morning in withdrawal and my anxiety would be 10 times worse. Or I'd be anxious about what did I say last night that I don't remember, those type of things. So it was just a vicious numbing and then feeling the pain even worse.
Right, because being in an unhealthy relationship can erode your self-esteem and confidence. It can lead to feelings of unworthiness or unworthy of being properly loved and cared for. So in your case, it sounded like you were using alcohol as a means to mask the feelings of your own self-doubt, not necessarily to mask the feelings of being in an unhealthy relationship.
Absolutely. And it's not to, you know, and this is something I've had to think about a lot during recovery is, you know, am I blaming something or someone for something I chose to do? And I tried to have a kind of a nuanced take on that, where it's not an excuse, but it does help explain it.
It does. And all of these feelings can compound onto one another. So in your case, you're dealing with low self-esteem, and that low self-esteem can expand feelings of the social anxiety or the feelings of inadequacy in social situations, which you kind of talked about. So then alcohol turns into what feels like a very necessary social lubricant in order to interact with people aside from your partner.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And from there is where it can turn into a cycle of dependence.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it was something that once I noticed, where like once it physically started showing, once the jaundice started, once the hair loss started, you know, I can take care of this myself. I'm just going to hole up in my room. And by this point, you know, we were living together, but by this point he was sleeping in the living room. The room was mine basically, which, you know, was a sign and was a sign I was trying to avoid that, hey, this isn't going so well. But I would just hole up in there for, you know, 3 to 4 days and the shaking and, you know, things would calm down, but then I'd go right back to it because it was hard to face sober. And I had no language. I had no way to express how I was feeling in a way that was healthy, that was productive. And not that alcohol gave me a language in which to do it. It just made me feel like I didn't need to speak up.
And for that reason, did it feel like alcohol provided some sort of positive reinforcement for your relationship with your partner?
You know, there were points, especially in kind of the beginning when I started using more alcohol, where it did make things better because I wouldn't feel the need to talk about the things that were wrong. It was almost like he encouraged it in that, oh, it helps your physical pain and you seem happier and kind of like, oh, you're not going to, you know, bother me about stuff type of thing. So he didn't push it on me or anything. He didn't force this on me, but he did. This is a good coping mechanism. This is something good you could do. And it's not that you just have a couple drinks and, you know, it'll be fine. And it just kept going from there.
So it seems like because of the drinking, you were able to receive some sort of validation from your partner, and this can reinforce the belief, in this case, the negative belief, that alcohol in some ways was an effective remedy for these issues in the relationship and your own insecurities at the time, which perpetuates the cycle of alcoholism.
Definitely.
There was psychological dependence, escapism, tolerance and withdrawal, and self-medication at play. But I feel like the big reason for the continuous use generally was an ongoing cycle of shame and guilt.
Absolutely. At one point, I think we were sitting on the couch watching something on TV, and I had passed out and I was having trouble breathing. He called an ambulance, and this is the first time that I was hospitalized for something drinking related. And they admitted me into the hospital, and I was there for about three days. And I got through a lot of the withdrawals. They made sure I was on seizure medication and, you know, this type of thing. I went back and, oh, okay, that this is going to be fine. I can handle this fine. But the relationship was still the same. And so it just led right back into it. And I felt that, you know, there is something with alcohol being a depressant. You know, it does, the physical signs of the anxiety do get calmed with it. And I needed it. I just felt that I needed it. I don't know how else I'm going to get through this, you know. And I had tried to break up with him before this point, and he cried and he begged me not to. And so I was trying to make it work. And then he broke up with me. And I had no way to cope. I got a couple bottles of wine and I ended up attempting to unalive myself. I don't know how you're supposed to, how your vocabulary is with this.
You can say whatever you want, however you want.
I tried to hang myself and he found me, and I wasn't doing it like as a cry for help or thinking that he would find me. But he did. And I was admitted to a psychiatric hospital, and I was at this hospital for about a week. Yeah, about a week. And when I got home, he had packed up a bunch of my stuff already. And he was already, you know, moving on, even though I was only gone for about a week. And at that point, I was so hurt and I was so confused. And there was alcohol still just waiting, you know. And so I picked it up again and I didn't stop. And I was very good at hiding my drinking. For a long time, nobody knew I had an issue. And I've always had a high tolerance for it. So I wouldn't, you know, get drunk right away. And it was extremely easy for me to get a hold of alcohol, to drink from the moment I woke up until the time I went to bed. And I just kept it going.
It's interesting that the negative consequences resulting from alcohol use, which triggered feelings of shame and guilt and self-loathing, almost created a paradox whereby you kept drinking to ease those distressing feelings, and those feelings kept compounding onto one another, causing you to continue drinking.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, you know, from that point, I moved out, and drinking was very much, drinking led me to feel that a sense of unworthiness, you know, a sense of waste. And so I almost just leaned into it like, well, this is what I'm feeling, must be true. There's no reason for me to really try, type of thing. So it continued every day, all day by myself. And this is when my organs just decided, you know, we're done. We're checking out. And that led to a hospitalization out of state due to organ failure. I was unconscious. I don't know how long I was unconscious in the hospital, but I was intubated. I was lots of hair loss, lots of jaundice, and I ended up waking up still in the hospital, and I was kept there for about a month. So I this was out of state. I had gone to a different state when this happened, and I had COVID on top of it, and the hospital had gotten a hold of my mom and told her, we don't think she's going to make it through tonight. We need you to come and sign these papers for cremation. But they wouldn't even allow my family to see me due to the COVID. And so it went from me hiding this, keeping it a secret from my family, to all of a sudden, now my whole family knew that I was dying, you know.
Speaking of family, mm-hmm. do you know or think that there were any biological factors that played into this, perhaps genetic predispositions or anything from your childhood that might have been a factor in your addiction?
Well, alcoholism, I guess addiction does run in my family, on both sides of my family. With the exception of one of my siblings, no one else has sought treatment for it or anything like that. So that does factor in. And also, like I had mentioned, my mental health issues also, there's a genetic component there as well. And, you know, as far as I know, I knew these things. You know, I knew that alcoholism runs in the family, and I still did it anyway, even though I did know and acknowledge that in my opinion anyway, that it was likely that I would have an issue. And it was something effective, and it was something that snatched me right away. And But I did know that these things ran in the family.
And because you were raised by people who struggled with issues like that, in return, you might have received some sort of inconsistent or unpredictable parenting. And because of that, I wonder if you developed an anxious attachment style where you might fear abandonment and have low self-esteem. And those things played a role into your relationships later on.
You know, I'm not too sure. I was diagnosed with a personality disorder when I was young. And that's made things like relationships or friendships kind of difficult for me. And so I'm not sure exactly how that might have impacted that aspect. But, you know, I'm sure everything comes down, whether it be nature or nurture. You know, your family and your upbringing and everything plays a huge role in so much about people. And it's just about navigating those things. And, you know, and I feel like so much of me talking about this is just like, oh, yeah, I knew that. I should have done better. I knew that and I should have done better. But that's always going to be something that I feel when I discuss it, because, you know, I'm going to school and just learning about the way that upbringing and your genetics and everything can play such a huge role. Knowing those things, I still did it anyway. Me suffering organ failure and physical changes that I knew were from the drinking, I still did it anyway. I kept going back to it. And then I was able to go home from the hospital, and I was put on medication. I also had to go through physical therapy due to being in bed in the hospital for so long. And I was determined that, you know, it was going to be great. Everything was going to be okay. I was going to, you know, just go home, get this done. And it didn't work. And it didn't work. I went back to it. Even though I had almost died, I still went back to it again. And it was kind of facing where I was in my life, all the things that had happened, you know, with my last relationship, with my entire world kind of being turned upside down by this relationship and the ending of it. Like I said, we were together for about 10 years and we were engaged and everything. We had our own place. And then for it to get completely changed, I was still very confused and almost unsure of my footing, where, you know, everything was new, everything was different. I was dealing with feelings of, you know, I was so dumb. Why did I stay for so long? I should have done this. I should have done that. And because of all that uncertainty, alcohol right there. I knew alcohol would fix it. I knew it. Oh, I almost died. Yeah, that's true. But alcohol, and I still went back. And eventually, you know, things start working out. Things start getting a little better. And I just, something had to be different. Something had to be different. And I was able to go to a rehab facility for 30 days. And it was almost as though, you know, there was no light bulb moment. There was no aha. There was no you know, turning on a light switch where you had been in the dark. It was a long process of just rewiring my brain, of just accepting that bad things are going to happen sometimes, but being secure in my ability to handle those things, to acknowledge the fact that worrying isn't going to change if those things are going to happen or not, have the strength to be able to face them. Once I was able to kind of latch on to that idea and to feel worthy, to be able to acknowledge my strength and really know who I am and not just who I felt like due to the way I was treated by others, those are the things that really shaped me. And I needed that time away at the rehab facility. I needed that time away to be by myself, to think, to hear other people's stories. And, you know, there were a lot of things that I didn't like about this place that I didn't agree with, certain things like that, but those were unimportant. I really just needed space to retrain my brain to accept things that I wasn't able to accept before. I think that's what helped. That's what helped a lot, I think, to make it even possible for me to have the life that I have today, which is a million times better than what I had before.
And what does that life look like now in comparison?
I'm doing much better. I'm healthier. I'm not in so much pain. My organs are happy. They're not mad at me anymore. My hair has grown back. I'm at a healthy weight. I'm physically active. I'm in a very loving relationship, a healthy relationship with boundaries on both sides, which is very important. I'm enjoying my hobbies again that I used to enjoy, that I stopped enjoying for years. I'm able to get back into those things and to actually feel a sense of joy, to feel a joy that's not clouded by the numbing effects of alcohol, that I can truly feel. And that, you know, that comes with a risk, you know, the risk of being hurt or disappointed or, you know, like I said, bad things happening. But I think just the ability to feel those things with the risks weighed out and enjoy them anyway has been the most important thing that I've been able to accomplish since my sobriety. But about addiction in general, I would say that it's something that I think everybody has to face in one way or another, that I think everybody, it affects everybody, whether it's you yourself to whatever degree, or it's somebody that you know, somebody that you love, somebody that you have heard of. It's such a human thing, and getting better doesn't necessarily mean that all of a sudden everything is perfect, everything is good. And I think just the fact that I know that it's possible is such a comfort, you know, it's such a comfort to me. And I hope that anybody that's affected by addiction in whatever form, that they're able to be comforted by the knowledge that getting better is possible. And it's really, really nice, and it's really worth it. And I think it brings me to be a part of this. I was nervous, but I'm glad that I was.
Well, like you mentioned, addiction has far-reaching consequences that not only impact the individual struggling with addiction, but it affects everyone. It affects the addict's family. It has impacts on the community. And there are societal implications. So thank you for giving back to those impacted by addiction. In the shadows of a toxic relationship, one may find solace in the fleeting moments of affection, clinging to them as lifelines amidst the storm. Similarly, addiction offers a temporary, fleeting euphoria that masks the pain and turmoil within. Yet both paths lead to a vicious cycle of dependence, trapping individuals in a perpetual state of seeking solace in what ultimately causes them harm. What compels someone to stay in a relationship fraught with toxicity, despite the evident toll on their well-being? Similarly, what drives one to turn to substances, knowing the havoc they may wreak on their mind, body, and soul? Is it an attempt to numb the pain of unmet expectations, to silence the echoes of past traumas, or simply a desperate grasp for control in a world spinning out of grasp? Exploring these connections unveils the raw vulnerability and complex emotions that underpin human existence, urging us to delve deeper into the intricate dance between love, pain, and the pursuit of escape. Till next time, I'm Quick Nick. Thanks for listening.
Addicts in the Dark is brought to you in part by Melissa Armstrong Coaching. Check out Melissa Armstrong at www.strongarm.ca. That's www.strongarm.ca.